Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, I'm Ruthanna Martefio, and here's Steve Katz. We are here with UFO Paranormal and Mystical Insights. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Ruthanne. We have an interesting and very well covered topic tonight, but it has all kinds of ramifications, and I'm talking about the so-called phenomenon of ghosts. These days we have many shows that have paranormal investigations of hauntings and of ghosts being sighted in various places and of houses with negative energies and so on and so forth. But, of course, it's been a major topic since at least Victorian times and before. My particular approach is from the scientific philosophical angle, although it's interdisciplinary, because in order to enter into it, first of all, we have to decide what it is, and if we believe it's a this incarnate spiritual energies of human beings, then there's some form of consciousness and life after death. So we do get into the spiritual religious area. Or you can look at it more parapsychologically as a natural phenomenon that does show that consciousness survives death without any theological overlay or theories behind it. What do you think, Ruthanne?
Well, I think you said something that, you know, a lot of people, they think that ghosts, quote, unquote, are malevolent, and not of that. However, I do believe that sometimes energy patterns that people may call ghosts are not. It's energy stays in areas, and if there's been some event caused so much pain, or on the other hand, joy, it's felt. The energy stays, I think. It remains, at least some of it. So
right. People
who are
right.
A little more sensitive to that can feel it. I personally definitely believe in spirits, and I believe that some that remain are not malevolent at all. But I think that in that case, it's maybe the duty if... I shouldn't say the duty, but it's the responsibility of people who can communicate with them to see if they want to go on, because that would seem the natural progression, and
right.
they may just be trapped somehow, and they might need encouragement to,
right.
you know, bump it up to another level. But
right.
as far as believing in them, of course, I mean, I've seen things that have no other explanation,
right.
and so... You know, people may call ghosts by other names sometimes, or what we would say
right.
spirit, or some other kind of entity, guide or something. Someone
right.
may call ghosts, but it is a particular entity. So, you know, one of the favorite things for a lot of people is, oh, especially kids, you know, they at night they have sleepovers and they tell ghost stories.
Right.
You know, it's and some of that, in most cases, I mean, it's just things they've heard. But, you know, after you're grown and you've been around and you've experienced certain things, it's still fun to talk
right.
with other people about it. So I mean,
go ahead. Well,
go
as
ahead.
I said, my entry into it was through parapsychology, not through religion,
mm-hmm.
but there's definitely a crossover between the two.
Yeah.
One of the theories that you mentioned is that we do know that there are psychic energies now. They've been measured, detected, you know, in terms of human subjects. And we
sure.
also know that with the new technologies that they have now, that the the so-called paranormal investigators can detect electromagnetic fields. They can detect radiation they use. They used temperature measurements. And also, there's some new thing that has come out now where, a spiritual entity can communicate through an electronic device, and I have seen that on some of the shows. But going back before that, I would cite one book, you know, if people really, you know, want to take a serious look at it, and that book is by the old parapsychologist Hans Holzer, and it was published in the mid-90s. A lot of the cases in here are from the 50s and 60s, but it's called Life Beyond, Compelling Evidence for Past Lives and Existence After Death. And he goes into the many anecdotal stories of people who have witnessed relatives who have, you know, passed on shortly thereafter. And there's a section of pictures, photographs actually, which sometimes these days, because of the expense of producing books, you don't always get. But there's one in particular that really has really, I've looked at it, and it really is an astounding photograph. And Holzer was a serious guy, and he vouches for the authenticity of it, that there was a church or cathedral in England, and a picture was taken, and you can see monks transparent almost. You know, you can see their outlines. You can clearly see them walking in a row. And they look, they have cowls, and they have robes on. But the peculiar thing about the picture is that they seem to be walking at a lower level somewhat than the floor that the picture was taken on. In other words, like their feet were under the floorboards a little bit. And then the caption said that at the time, something happened there. The monks were either killed or driven out. There was some sort of dispute or I don't know. He doesn't go into the specific incidents of what actually happened. But at that time, the cathedral's floor was lower. I thought that was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are we seeing... Now, if we can go look at it several different ways, you could say that because of the traumatic events, these psychic energies have imprinted themselves on the ether, so to speak, at that area, and at various times they manifest. Or you could, there was also a theory of almost like a photograph. In other words, it imprinted itself at the time the energies imprinted themselves. And what you're seeing is like if you would replay a DVD or a tape or something, you know. You're not seeing anything that's there now. You're seeing the after images of something that was very traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's another way of looking at it. I think there is widespread acceptance of the phenomenon. Now, the idea is, what is it? I agree with you. I believe that these are the spiritual energy bodies of people, human beings who have died on this plane of existence, and that is, and for some reason, some event has compelled them either to stay in the area and not fully ascend into a higher dimension, or for sometimes they come back to deliver messages or for other reasons. And, there are many, many theories behind it, but, to me that seems to make the most sense. Now, I go at it also parapsychologically or natural scientifically, that The specific spiritual energy that Wilhelm Reich discovered, the orgone energy, cosmic energy, is mass-free, basically. And I would say, perhaps, that the spiritual bodies really are composed of this energy and a web of subatomic particles that can penetrate anything. Because during the Orinor experiment, he found out, if people had listened to that show when I described his work, that this cosmic energy or spiritual energy can penetrate anything, even lead. In other words, it goes through it. And these stories of the ghosts, it occurred to me that there are many, many stories of ghosts going through things. They go through walls, they materialize, they dematerialize. So I'm beginning to think that the psychic energies can do this because of their density is so slight that they can actually pass through, you know, ordinary objects, or even in his case, he found that it could pass through lead even. So that's, you know, that's one explanation. Now, Holzer has studied tens of thousands of these cases. He's hardly the only one. I mean, there are many, many, I think it was Bishop Pike, who went at it from a more religious perspective and had a lot of communications with his son, who had apparently committed suicide. And a lot of the organized religions don't dwell on it. I know Judaism has very little about it, although the Kabbalists were well aware of it. You know, there's a lot of fear connected with it. But we do have a whole religion based on it, which is spiritualism. And that religion, their pastors or their clergy are basically mediums. And the whole religion is based on communication with people who have passed on, although the phenomenon of ghosts is not, you know, a specific focus. You know, it easily fits within their total complex.
Exactly.
Now,
I mean, it's not that they're not that they don't accept it and all that, but the basis is more on just the spirits and entities, and not necessarily those that you may see. There was a scandal way back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, with that kind of thing. And,
right.
You know, a lot of things turn out to be not necessarily the messages weren't always untrue, but there was a lot of, the table tipping and different things that, you know, ectoplasma, you know, all of these things that there was a lot of trickery involved, and that really gave spiritualism a bad name.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, like anything else, there's the honest, legitimate investigators and practitioners and clergy people, religious people as well. And then, of course, you know, you have charlatans who get involved. And,
sure.
You know, the thing of it is, I had a few readings with mediums because, unfortunately, my wife passed away a number of years ago. And that got me refocused on the idea, you know, on the whole concept, which is not uncommon for people when they lose people close to them. And I got a very highly evidential reading over the phone from a medium headquartered someplace in, I think she's in Rhode Island. And and I attended some of their services too, you know, just to see what it was all like. You know, just to see, you know, how it operated. But what my opinion is this, is that the reading you get, first of all, they're accessing this psychic energy, which, you know, I mean, when we don't see television waves, we don't see radio waves, you know, so the fact that we don't see it, we don't see the actual energetic waves or particles that are transmitting this information to the medium, you know, is not a proof that it you know, that they're making the stuff up out of their own heads, or they're somehow guessing at it from things they get from you. Good mediums will tell you, don't tell me anything about it. But the point I'm trying to make is the messages you get that they bring through, and I'm talking about the honest mediums, which the vast majority, it all depends on the receptivity of the receiver and the ability of the receiver. In other words, if you have an old television set, it's not so much today when everything is cable and so on, particularly during the era of when they had antennas, if you remember that era when you used to have, like, indoor antennas and stuff like that, the reception would vary depending on weather conditions or, you know, sometimes electric conditions would interfere with the reception. So, and it's, again, it's interesting that Reich used to say that the, in working with All Grown Energy, the condition of the researcher was important because you had to be sufficiently open and sensitive to make certain observations. And some people were armored or closed or blocked to the extent that, you know, they couldn't perceive it, you know, because they were not sensitive enough or open enough. So a lot of times some of the difficulty has to do with the degree of consciousness and the psychic condition of the person receiving the message.
Exactly.
And so that, you know, will also tell, is also a reason why sometimes it varies and, you know, sometimes it's not that evidential, you know. And I make factors for that because a few times I could tell things that were guessed at. In other words, things that were, it didn't ring true. I didn't know where it was coming from, and I just put it down to, like, something that the receiver had gobbled up somehow. You know what I'm saying?
Well, this is the whole thing. I used to do some mediumship work, and, you know, there's so many variables. And to expect a medium to be right 100% of the time is absolutely ridiculous.
No, it's unrealistic. I mean, it's not, you know.
No. Right, because
and particularly,
it depends on how the medium receives, because sometimes people receive, like, they may be speaking in phrases and words that they in their everyday life never would use. Other times they may receive images and ideas, and then they translate in their own words out to the people. And then the people may not understand them so well. So there's so many things that can interfere with getting messages.
Right.
And you know, another thing is if you're trying to get a medium to call a certain person, you know, sometimes that's just not realistic, because if we believe that this person has passed on to another plane, you know, it's not they're just there waiting to be called either. They do have quote unquote lives of their own in the great beyond on the next level where they are.
Right.
And so they don't always they're not able to just drop everything and come when they're called. So, you know, there's a lot going on there.
Well, I mean, it's like Hans Holzer says that there are definite laws that do govern the psychic realm, including what we're talking about, and we don't understand all of them, but you just can't call somebody up at will. He says, you know, the most highly evidential ones are the ones that, you know, happen spontaneously. And where, you know, there's more than one witness, and, now he's used the Ouija board, which he doesn't recommend, generally speaking, but he said that, he said that you can sometimes bring through people on there, because he said that once they brought through a soldier, I think, who had died in either World War One, I think it was World War One or World War Two. And they got all the information through the board. You know how the board works. There's two people and a planchette or a water glass. And, you know, so they spelled out the letters and they got the information they got. They actually got it verified. because I think the Department of the Army has a record of, you know, people going back to the Civil War and beyond, you know. So, I mean, they were able to verify that such a person did at one time exist. Now, that's highly evidential because it was unknown to either of them. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
So that's highly evidential. And now, something else which has happened that's been around since, well, for at least 20, 30 years, it's called the EVP. In fact, there was even a movie about it, finally, about 2-3 years ago, the electronic voice phenomena. And this is so-called spirit voices, where it was discovered that sometimes you could record voices on a tape recorder using tuning in between channels and using the white noise, and that the discarnate entity would use that energy to communicate. And I have heard some very good ones on documentaries. I tried to produce it. I couldn't do it, but my equipment that I had at the time was very primitive, and it's more sophisticated today, you know. But it's really startling because, and some of the paranormal investigators that you'll see on TV, also, it's another tool that they use. There was one segment in this documentary that I remember where, I don't know where this was. It was a major city near a waterway. Either it was the Great Lakes or it was New York or it was someplace. And there was a big, ship that had been used for an employee's picnic or something, which sunk. And, you know, the investigators came to the hall where it was docked or something, and they got on EVP, and you could hear it very clearly. They got, you know, a voice saying, I did it. I did it. You know, it was my fault, and it was, you know, apparently came out it was the voice of the captain at the time or whoever was in charge.
Wow.
You know, that, you know, they were negligent, or I don't know the, you know, all of the details. But sometimes you can hear the voices very clearly. At other times, it's really a matter of interpretation. You know, you'll hear something that can sound like one thing or another. And those are the more questionable ones. This, to this day, is unexplained, and if anyone is interested, years ago there was a book published by Konstantin with a K, Raudiv, R-A-U-D-I-V-E, I believe, who is a psychologist in Europe, and it describes the phenomenon, and he had a whole circle of people working on it, and apparently some guy accidentally discovered it, or was recording bird sounds or something, and this is another what we would call paranormal phenomena. You know, science has no explanation for it. Everything
right.
that's heard is not being, sometimes things that are being heard are, you know, not very evidential because, you know, it's like a Rorschach. You can look at a blot, ink on a blotter, and someone will see a horse, someone else will see a tree, you know, where you have sound which is coming through but is garbled. You know, so that's another phenomenon that that speaks to this whole thing. But strictly speaking, ghosts have always been considered this white misty substance in the shape of a man or woman, sometimes dressed in clothes not of the era in which they are sighted. That's another sign that's frequently reported. Apparently, temperature goes down, which shows there's some sort of energetic phenomenon happening, you know, probably having to do with the different dimensions.
Right.
It could be, the theory is that, I know the old occult scientists use this theory that the spiritual entity could be using energy from our plane, which drives the temperature down in order to manifest. That's why this cold spots, cold winds or something in areas like inside enclosures or houses where normally such things shouldn't exist unless you have your windows open and there's a, you know, some other reason behind it, air conditioning
right.
or whatnot. So,
yeah.
I mean, so what Holzer says basically is that there are various recurring phenomena that match and tens of thousands of cases, all by people who are independently of each other, don't know each other, and also from more distant times where the phenomena was not as widely known, or perhaps, you know, with people who've done really, you know, no belief in it or had no real, didn't really study the whole thing and experienced it. So, you know, it's not as if they're bringing in outside knowledge and everyone has, you know, the same outside knowledge that they're drawing on from other people. So, you know, there's a high degree of evidence behind it. You know, I would say it's persuasive. Of course, the worm in the apple is it's not beyond a reasonable doubt to many people. But to many people, it is beyond a reasonable doubt. And I'm inclined to think that with all of the occurrences and the regularity and the phenomena which match, that we're looking at something that is lawful and that is supernatural and that we do not have an explanation according to the natural laws that we understand. So, you know, and typically the research into this goes up. Like after World War II, there was a big spike in interest in this because people lost so many people in the war. You know, and already, you know, people had made sightings of, you know, buddies that they had lost, or, you know, someone who was a pilot lost somebody else that they used to fly with, and, you know, saw that person walk through the barracks or something, you know, all these kinds of things. And then, of course, parents lost children and lose children in these wars, and I don't know if it's that widely known, but Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who is responsible for the Sherlock Holmes stories, became a very convinced spiritualist. Or parapsychologist,
mm-hmm.
you know, whichever one, wrote some books about it. I think he lost a son in World War One, and there are very, you know, there are many. Many people have investigated from all different kinds of angles, and there are a lot of very interesting stories about it. And as far as what's shown now on TV with these paranormal teams, some of the, I would say at least 70% of what I see, or at least half, to me, have perfectly natural explanations. Once in a while, you do come across something that seems evidential, you know.
I guess I have a thing about people doing this for money, going on TV and doing it because
yes.
they have to put on a show. And, I mean, that's what it's a TV
well,
show.
Well, they're hired by people who, you know, they're hired by people who have phenomena that they don't understand in their houses, you know, and they go, they get paid for that. Yeah. But, see, Holzer, it could have been the era that he was writing in, other than mediums, and spiritualists, you didn't have people who were earning a living from this, like, you know, teams of people. It hadn't become a part of a more recognized parapsychology only became recognized as a serious scientific discipline, you know, in relatively recent decades. I mean, you know, so before that, you had a lot of spontaneous reports in which people maybe had an emotional interest in it, but sometimes people had no emotional interest in it, but they were, as you said, malevolent spirits, but, you know, they were the houses, they saw things in the houses, and they didn't know what it was, and in those days, they used to get, well, something similar to the exorcists to come and say prayers and light candles and do other things to help that entity make the transition, because they were there because of some traumatic event that had happened, which is very common. There's a lot of stories like that.
Right. I mean,
and
we still do that. We still clear houses. That's not uncommon.
Right.
Several years ago, I knew a group of people in Albany, New York, who And they did not make money off of this. This was not their
livelihood. Right.
But they had some of the equipment. And I went one night with them to a restaurant that had, you know, lots of stories about it being haunted. And we were in the upstairs where nobody really went. I mean, the restaurant was like a house, an old house had been converted and, you know, it's on the ground floor. But upstairs we definitely found like two different pockets of really cold air and energy. And we didn't need any equipment to, you know, find that out. But they were using equipment, and as far as I know, they were planning on going back and, you know, doing some other tests and things, but they were doing it just because of their interest in it. But it had nothing to do with making a living from it. But I've worked with people clearing houses and clearing, just clearing houses, but then also sending entities on to, and, you know, sometimes it's a simple thing. Somebody may be lingering because that was where they lived. They had a wonderful life. Their spouses died, and they're just sort of lingering. And it's not that hard to help them on. It's a very kind thing to do, actually, rather than get all freaky about, you know, these different things happening. You know, the evidence is there, and I'm terrified. I'm not going to go back to my house kind of thing. I think that movie, oh, and I can't think the name of it. I never saw it. You know, many movies. Oh, it was called the Amityville Horror or something like that. That got a lot of people spooked, I believe. I did read that the movie was nothing like the true story. The movie was, there again, really upped in drama from the book. Evidently, there had been a book, too. But, you know, some people like that little edgy thing, and so they like the drama, and they're more susceptible to falling for different things like some of these TV shows and things like that, because the ones that you're saying, you said maybe 70% or 75 have probably just normal explanations, but yet you try to tell that to one of these big fans and they'll blow you away because they want to believe, so they aren't very reasonable about it.
Ruthann?
There you are. I don't know what happened. We got
cut off.
Well, you disappeared. When I looked down, you were on mute.
I know. I may have hit the wrong thing on my cell phone, or we may have some kind of paranormal interference. Who knows? I don't know. but I did listen to what you were saying there, and you know, there was another point that I was going to make before I got cut off here that, you know, there are, oh, yes, I know what I was going to say. Back in the days when I was in law school and I studied property law, which is one of the things lawyers, you know, study in law school, and I remember a case I'll never forget. There was a case, I believe it was in New Jersey, where a sale of a house was rescinded, contract and all was rescinded, because the seller or broker did not disclose that the house was haunted.
Yep.
And now, this is not, I say this is judicial recognition of ghosts. Actually, there was some phenomena in the house, and it was known, and the sellers knew about it, and they didn't inform the buyers. And I always thought that was very interesting that the judge was open-minded enough to say that, well, you know, it's been shown to me that something's going on there, and that you guys knew about it, and you didn't tell the buyer.
I have read that I think in probably all of our states, that is the reason.
There are other cases that way, probably, too.
Yes, exactly. That if you know the house is, quote-unquote, haunted, and you do
right.
not tell the buyer, the prospective buyer,
right.
yeah, the deal can be just kiboshed. It's
right.
Which,
right.
Like
it's a material condition. It's non-disclosure, and obviously an engineer coming in is not going to necessarily know about it, and it's not going
right.
to detect it. So, I mean, but I always felt that was interesting because the judge, because those cases could not have been decided that way unless there was something real going on, you know?
Right, right, because that's serious. I mean, you know, you
yeah.
have this contract here, and then all of a sudden the person finds out that there's a ghost or it's haunted or whatever, and, you know, they find out that the people who are living there, like, the reason they want to get out, or not necessarily.
I think the Amityville case is one of those cases, not a case where the contractors were sent. I don't know, but that was a case where there was a heavy haunting in that house, wasn't there?
Like I said, I never saw the movie, and I didn't
yeah.
read a book, but I mean, I
right.
heard that the truth was not nearly like the movie.
Right. Well,
I,
they always, you know, take dramatic license with all these things.
Exactly.
Because, you know,
right.
I mean, you know, it's yeah. entertainment as well as, you know, telling a true story supposedly. And
yeah.
But you know, it's common enough and it's widespread enough that there definitely is a phenomenon. Now, you know, you can explain it in different ways. I think there's enough evidence that to support our view. I also think that, you know, there's all, you know, you always have skeptics who can find ways of undermining, you know, almost all evidence. Now, I saw something on one of these paranormal shows which was just fantastic, and if it was true, it would be absolute proof beyond a reasonable doubt. But I don't know, because like you say, and, you know, you say when people make their living at something, you know, they may tend to exaggerate or they may tend to fabricate evidence or whatever. I mean, I prefer not to believe that, but it's also, incidentally, one of the things I look at with UFO investigators.
Yeah.
You know, when your reports come from people who, you know, they don't had no financial interest in the whole subject. It was probably the first time they ever encountered it. And or like that guy we had on 1 week that called and participated with us when we were discussing UFOs, described his experience and, you know, out nowhere, and that's, you know, most of the experiences. But you do have certain people who run seminars and run courses and do different things, and, you know, when there's a financial interest in, you know, then it kind of mitigates it a little bit. I mean, if the evidence is good enough, it shouldn't matter. But, you know, but in this particular instance, you know, it's just, you know, it's just very widespread, and there are explanations for various different things. I mean, there's, you know, mist that comes in from the sea and other things that occur, you know, so it's, but it's so overwhelming. There are so many different cases. I mean, if you go to the library or buy this book. I don't know if this book is still in print. It may not be, but the subject of ghosts is of perennial interest to people. So usually the books stay in print for quite a long time, or they get reprinted, republished, and you know that there's something definitely is going on. You know, and I even heard a scientist who said, look, I believe that there are ghosts, even though scientifically, I don't believe there are ghosts. In other words, he was saying, really, he said that he came across, you know, some accounts that he really believed, or maybe he had his own experience, but he was a materialist. And he says, I don't know really how to explain this. It doesn't fit in with my belief system, but it does seem to exist. You know, he says, you know, I think there are ghosts, but it doesn't fit in with what I believe. That was the oddest statement I ever heard. You know,
I love people like that because he's open enough. I mean, he's just saying, you know, we're taught so much that it has to be either or instead of and. So you
right.
we can believe this and that. It's like, okay, I've seen evidence or I've heard evidence or experienced it myself.
Right.
And I have no scientific knowledge of how this could happen. So,
right.
And it's a good word. It doesn't have to be but
right.
or either or, yeah.
I mean, the guy is just being very honest, you know.
Yeah.
He said, look, he said, according to the way I see things as a scientist and a materialist, when you're dead, you're dead. I mean, you know, that's it. But he said, on the other hand, I have encountered these experiences of this evidence, and I believe it existed. So he says, I can't reconcile these two things, you know. So he was honest enough to say, look, you know, it's like cognitive dissonance, you know. There's two things that just don't go together, and yet you still believe both of them, you know.
And that's okay.
So,
that's okay.
Yeah, it's all right. He was just being honest. He was saying, you know, I really feel it exists, but my belief system doesn't accept it.
So then at that point, it's like, well, even by saying that, his belief system has been altered a bit.
Challenged, right, oh, right. I think like, someone who says that is saying to themselves, you know, I should, you know, if I maybe I had the time or the inclination, or maybe I should look into this and alter my beliefs, my general system that I approach reality with, because this is at variance with it and it seems to be real. So, well, I mean,
right,
the whole scientific approach is continuous revision, because
exactly.
things that we know today, then we learn more about the phenomenon and we may change our minds completely about what it is that we're describing or what it is that we're working with.
Yeah.
You know.
And those,
so
those
I think that's a scientific,
people.
You know, yeah.
Well, yeah, it's evolution. It's growth.
Yeah.
And we have nothing to fear from that. What we have to fear is from these people in any area who are just so convinced that their way is the only way, and this is the way they did it back in 1359, and this is the way we're going to do it. Well, you know, they're just stuck, and they're dangerous, and you know,
yeah.
That's
well,
political
can
parties.
Be yes, definitely
back.
Can be that way.
Backwards.
But I mean,
yeah.
That's not, you know, of course that's not the way science or rigorous philosophy, you know, should. Function, and
no.
Now, if you get into the realm of theological belief, that's a different realm. But I don't know of any theology that's based on a belief system that the people who believe in it say, well, this is my belief, but I don't have any evidence for it. I've never heard that. So, I mean, obviously, but, of course, people interpret phenomena in different ways. You know, I've heard that explanation. But, I mean, as far as just strictly trying to keep it in a parapsychological or scientific or philosophic realm, you know, there's more to be discovered. I always come back to my one fact that I have that I got from, I'm interested, as many people are, in the latest discoveries in physics. And because it sometimes really challenges your reality. And I always come back to that same thing, that the discovery that the visible reality that we experience on a day-by-day basis in our space-time dimension, the material atomic reality, is only approximately 6% of what the universe has. So,
exactly. And that may be a high figure, because since
right.
we don't know, I mean,
if there's 94% out there that you know, I would put under the rubric of metaphysics, actually, there's a hell of a lot we don't know. So that prevents you from becoming too dogmatic and too certain, you know, and too authoritarian about, you know, like at one time people thought the Earth was the center of the cosmos because the sun, you know, seemed to go around the Earth. You know,
and now we
course,
have what
you know,
one out of every five Americans believes that the sun revolves around the Earth in this latest poll, because Americans are so dumbed down. But
you mean today?
Yes.
Oh my God, that's
see that.
I think
so,
you mentioned that once before. I find that hard to believe. Oh. I think I said the last time you said that, I said the other thing that astounded me is that people, I think, I don't know, maybe they were from a political science department somewhere in a college, went around with a survey, and they read the rights that are in the first 10 amendments to people without telling them that they were the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. Just, do you think do you think that this is right, that these principles are things we should live by? And a lot of people said no. And that's in the that's in the Constitution, you know.
Americans are being very much dumbed down now with some of these right-wing ignoramuses, you know, trying to take science out of the schools or to change it. We're going to have to be very careful in this country because we're falling behind so many others. I mean, I'm not a nationalist. I really don't care. But, I mean, I do care to the extent that I hate for people children to be being raised as ignoramuses.
Right. I mean, it's definitely worrisome, you know. This kind of attitude is definitely worrisome. And we have to provide better education. I mean, that's the only answer you can give there. And
not privatize the schools, because that is a horrible thing, because then they will, you know, just totally teach whatever kind of crap.
No, people do have the right to send their kids to private schools that teach various...
People have that right, it shouldn't, you have a right to send your kid to a school that may be excellent, it may be another right-wing place where they come out with all these false ideas, but we should have a choice. So private.
No, I mean, I'm solidly behind public education, because I mean, and I've always believed, you know, I think that is a bedrock of any healthy society and democracy or whatever. You know, if people want to send their kids to private schools, that's another matter. But the public education should be as well funded as possible. There's a danger. I mean, I'm not in favor of the privatization of the schools at all. And, for that reason, because I feel that the education in the public schools will be even worse than it is now. And, you know, the people who know how to game the system will have a lot of wealth, you know, are the ones that are going to get their kids into the good schools. You know what I'm saying?
I'm talking about what I've been reading about certain states that are basically... they've gone that way, or they're in the process of going that way.
Yeah.
Schools will be privatized, so corporations will be teaching your children. And
that's worrisome.
Fanatical ones, then that's what your kids are going to learn. That's what I'm talking about. Not where people have an open and free society and can choose.
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying. It's worrisome. You know, it is. It's worrisome. The problem is that, you need very well-funded and very good public education for, you know, every child in the society, in any society, you know. And, you know, as far as the other stuff, I mean, parents have the option, of course, of, you know, sending kids to private schools. And although a private school can teach whatever they want theologically, but if they are actually teaching things that are wrong, that's educational malpractice in my mind, because, you know, you're actually doing a disservice to the students, and they're not going to be able to get into, you know, they won't have the knowledge to get into college or to, you know, learn further what they're supposed to learn if you're actually teaching them things, you know, that are wrong about history and other things, and then they can't take the test because they don't have the knowledge, or it's not being taught to them, you know. That should not be permitted. But if the, you know, as long as the regular secular education is up to standard, then, you know, the theology is the theology. I mean, you know, I remember when I was a kid in Brooklyn going to elementary school, and they had something called a release time, in which I think once a week they used to let the kids out to attend a, like a Hebrew school or some sort of Catholic or some other type of religious instruction. They would let them, you know, get out like maybe 2 hours early, to go to that. And, you know, and of course in those 2 hours, the rest of us, they didn't teach things that those kids had to know at that time. But,
I'm sorry, I got us off, but this is, you were talking about when people used to believe that the sun revolved around the earth kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean it's just basic facts that that they teach in kindergarten, you know. Or I remember with my son, you know, the first things they were teaching them have very much had to do with the weather, the atmosphere, you know, the sun, the rain, you know, different things I guess that the kids could see in their everyday lives. I mean, you know, and
I got us way off the topic when you were saying that people have, you know, we don't have the knowledge now, but we have more knowledge than kids back when people believed that this, you know, that the sun revolved around the earth and all. So we have to adjust our beliefs as we go and as we learn.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the strict materialism, that's what I call mechanical materialism, which means if you can't kick the tires or count the numbers or, you know, it's not something that everybody can replicate in an experimental lab over and over and over again with precisely the same result, that, you know, it doesn't exist or it's something that's, you know, a matter of imagination. That has actually proved to be a barrier because if you realize that we're in our reality here, we're only getting 6%, and if the other 94%, 70-plus of that percentage is dark energy, and the rest up to the 94% is dark matter, that means that there's a tremendous, that we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg of cosmic reality with all of its many dimensions, and the physicists are very good about this. They say there may be up to 11 dimensions, and, you know, so that right there, that should tell you not to restrict yourself to just what's in front of your nose. And there's a statement Einstein made, Albert Einstein, that really interested me because people think of him, obviously he would fit anybody's definition of a genius, but what was very interesting is, you know, people think, well, he was, you know, such an advanced mathematician and all this. And, of course, in his later years, he was over here in Princeton at the, you know, they had the Advanced Institute at Princeton for Physics and stuff. The people that came from Europe, they didn't even have to teach at Princeton. They used to give them offices and, you know, they would tell them just discover things, write papers, you know. And he said, you know, most of my major scientific insights, this is Einstein, he said, came intuitively and did not come as a result of mathematical calculations. In other words, what he said is he intuited what he thought the phenomena was, and afterwards he brought in calculations, you know, to help prove it and so on and so forth. I thought that was very interesting because he said, he also made a funny statement. He said, you know, once you get too deeply in calculations, you get all shitted up. he was a funny guy. He had a good sense of humor, apparently. But I felt that was very interesting because intuitive insight is not something that one normally associates with natural science. But it was the same with Darwin. It took some kind of intuitive connection in his travels to put all this stuff together and realize how come some species thrive and some disappear and we've discovered this, discovered that, you know, and he put it together. So, you know, and I think that faculty, which Wright called the first organic sense, which very few people would call that because his work is not that well known. But that capacity for insight, which includes not just the mind in a narrow sense, but the entire organism, including what we would call the soul or the spiritual aspect and so on, that, you know, has resulted in some advances in our understanding of the broader reality beyond what's right in front of us. And using that criteria, I would say that, you know, parapsychology, metaphysics, and what we're discussing now, you know, has a very bright future, and maybe the brightest future for the evolution of humanity. You know, because otherwise we're stuck in this, like, circular mechanical materialism, you know, and, you know, it's like counting from 1 to 10 over and over and over again, you know. I mean, you're excluding so much of reality because it doesn't fit your preconceived notions of how reality should be proven or how things should exist, otherwise they're imaginary. That is really a big bar to the advancement of knowledge, and this fits into it.
Well, being very dogmatic, and, you know, just like, well, this is the way it is. Now, it's true,
right,
we've discovered something that we didn't know a few thousand years, 100 years ago,
right,
whatever.
Right.
But now, this is the end-all and be-all. This is it.
Right.
Well, that's so detrimental to any kind of growth.
Right.
Yeah. And like
I
you
mean,
say,
I thought, yeah, because it limits you. And free thinking, free thought is really the... you know, the sine qua non of the advancement of humanity. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
Because in those eras, like the so-called, what used to be called the Dark Ages in medieval times, when, you know, you were not supposed to look into certain things, and if you did, you know, the Inquisition would be banging on your door, and before you know it, you would be burning at the stake. I mean, that held back knowledge, you know. Or, you know, if you treat what Aristotle was talking about as the beginning and also the end, then, you know, anything that contradicts that's got to be wrong, you know, you're not going to get very far.
No.
You know?
No.
I mean, he was a genius for his age, but, you know, but that's, you know, that, and it's still, I recommend a movie which I mean, who would have thought when this movie was made that evolution... would be an issue of contention again, but the so-called Scopes trial, the monkey trial in Tennessee back in the 20s, where a high school teacher was arrested for violating the state law in Tennessee at the time, which made it a crime, probably a misdemeanor, I mean, but it was still a crime to teach the theory of evolution in public schools, and it was an actual case. It was one of these, like, rural towns. It was like a Bible Belt type town, very fundamentalist. And, you know, most of the state probably was like that at the time. And Chicago newspaper brought in Clarence Darrow to defend the high school teacher, and William Jennings Bryan was the special appointed prosecutor. It was called Inherit the Wind. It starred Spencer Tracy as Clarence Darrow and Frederick March as Williams Jennings Bryan. It's a wonderful movie. And,
okay, Inherit the Wind.
Inherit the Wind, yeah.
And that's probably on... you can probably see it on YouTube. I don't know. But our time is up. Once again, but so fast. But thank you so much. Thank you, Ruthann.
It goes fast because it's interesting.
Exactly. Right. So tomorrow is the Friday the 13th full moon. The next full moon, Friday the 13th, will be in 2049. So celebrate this one. Yeah.
Let's expect something.
Yeah. We'll be back next Thursday.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.